BAI Car or visit WBAI.org/donateyourcar.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. The previous program was the WBAI Evening News, which is heard daily at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Extinction Rebellion Radio coming up.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the Rebellion.
Welcome back to Extinction Rebellion Radio with Ailee Slane and Matthew Kearney. Extinction Rebellion is a politically nonpartisan international movement that uses nonviolent direct action to persuade governments to act justly on the climate and ecological emergency.
And good evening. We're talking today with Scott Howland, author of the article entitled The Nature of the Beast, Fossil Fuel Corporations, the Cornwall Alliance, and Climate Change Denial. Scott is a doctoral student at the University of Dayton in the Department of Religious Studies. He earned his BA in psychology from Holy Cross College in South Bend, Indiana, and his master's in theological studies from the University of Dayton. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, we love having you. Tell us a little about your work. Specifically, you know, what is the focus of your research at the University of Dayton?
Sure, certainly. My current work is looking at the history of American evangelicalism and its relationship with environmentalism and sort of all the different social and cultural, right, you know, that whole web, right, mm-hmm. that exists there through this very specific lens that sort of layers together Marxist theory and psychoanalysis and then Christian theology. And it's obviously a work in process, right? This is what, right, you know, what my dissertation is going to focus on.
Cool. Well, that sounds fascinating. And like so many people who go to grad school, you go in thinking you want to do one thing and you come out with an entirely different project altogether.
Certainly.
So, for the first part of our series on religion and climate change, we featured the film God and Green. And at one point in that film, Catherine Stewart, who wrote the book The Power Worshippers Inside the Dangerous Rise of the Religious Right, you know, she talks about the role that the Cornwall Alliance plays in propagating climate denial. And in particular, she says that the alliance casts the environmental movement as unbiblical.
They tell us that the environmentalist movement is actually unbiblical, and they produce that DVD series, Resisting the Green Dragon, a biblical response to one of the greatest deceptions of our day.
Resisting the Green Dragon cast environmentalism as this threat to the Christian worldview, as an idolatrous worldview that was infiltrating churches and had to be resisted.
The idea is for pastors to create teams of congregants that will, as they describe it, advance kingdom values in the public arena. And then they give them tools to create messaging materials and to vote their so-called biblical values.
Now, in your article, you focus specifically on the Cornwall Alliance. What is this alliance and why is it so important?
Yeah, so the Cornwall Alliance is interesting to say the least. And so of what it is, well, first I'll start with what they claim to be, right, or what they, and I don't pass judgment on whether they genuinely think they are doing this or if it is, you know, intentionally, right, you know, deceptive. That,
sure,
that I don't know, right, but I do know what they claim to be and what I see as what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so they, right, what their, you know, mission statement says is that they are working on, right, sort of three main things, right? Right, right. The first one is biblical earth stewardship, right? So the first one, okay, that doesn't sound terrible. That, you know, okay. and then, right, the second one, right, is economic development of the world's poor. Okay, that's right, also seemingly a good thing. And then the last one, right, is the proclamation and defense of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Okay, that could also, you know, be positive, right? That's right. None of these things are right, you know, on the surface seem bad. And that's what's so dangerous about it, right? Is that right? When you read through their blog, right? When you watch, right? The Green Dragon series, mm-hmm. which I've not watched all of, but have watched enough of.
Now, what is the Green Dragon series?
So they produced this multi-part DVD set that essentially lays out their whole, you know, sort of argument against climate change, against new environmentalism. And their name for environmentalism, right, they call it the Green Dragon. And at one point, they claim, that environmentalism, is this danger, not only to society, but to the church.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is that, on the surface, these seem like positive things, right? But if you are a person that really knows anything about any of those three topics, and then you consume their content, you kind of have to go, well, now wait a minute, right? What you are saying that you're doing is not quite right. Now, obviously, there are lots of people that consume it and say, yes, right, this is, how you go about these three things. And I think why it's so convincing for many people is because it definitely seemed as though it's aimed at people who are already immersed in this evangelical right-wing Christian circle, right? And it constantly uses this rhetoric of environmentalism is unbiblical, this stewardship is biblical, and so therefore for a Christian fundamentalist, that's all you need to know, right? If it's unbiblical, then that's out. And so when you have, theologians and, popular, pastors and things, that are known in these communities, who these people trust for all sorts of issues, telling them that environmentalism is unbiblical, well, then that's it, right? Then that's the end of the conversation for them. But if you need more, there's this multi-part DVD series that just reiterates this rhetoric over and over again. And I don't have any exact, numbers on their distribution, but I mean, it has a very wide reach, right? I mean, it's something that's very easily, accessible, right? It's sold to, churches and schools and all sorts of, different communities.
So the Cornwall Alliance is this group, it's a nonprofit organization, mm-hmm. right? As you set it up, it has these three very nice sounding objectives. And as you see it, the reality is a little bit different. They're attacking mm-hmm. the environmental movement. Is that could you characterize what you see as the real truth, the reality behind the Cornwall Alliance? Is that it in a nutshell, that they're there to attack the environmental movement?
Yeah, I think that's exactly why they exist. So, I mean, the everything that they propose as being positive for this, biblical earth stewardship, is essentially the exact opposite of what scientists around the world, scientists and scholars from all different fields, mm-hmm. Agree upon that. And, there's, at least generally, right, this is the direction we need to move, in what they call stewardship, what they call, care for the poor, is the total opposite of that. And mm-hmm. so, again, whether that's, I mean, there's certainly the intention, of opposing the environmental movement. Now, what I talk about in the article is that, what they're not honest about, is where the funding comes from. And the funding comes from, what they call what they claim are just, donations. But the vast majority of their donations come from this entity called the Donors Trust, and the Donors Capital Trust, which are these two sister funds, if you want to call them that. And essentially those two funds are these anonymous ways, it's sort of, dark money, if you want to call it that, those with money to give can put it in this fund, and then it's distributed then to all these different causes. But the Donors Trust is very specific that the money that is given to it, right, is going to be used to promote conservative causes, right? And so it, you know, there's dozens of different places, right, that it goes, but they have a long history of giving decent amounts of money, right, to places like the Cornwall Alliance, and the Heritage Foundation, who, you know, whose main purpose, right, is to, you know, oppose environmentalism. And so when you layer in, you know, those, that new layer of, material influences there, all the things that they begin to claim sort of start to make more sense.
All right, you're listening to WBAI's Extinction Rebellion Radio with Matthew Kearney and Elise Lane, and we're speaking with Scott Howland about the Cornwall Alliance as an apparatus of justification for climate change denial.
So to talk about the motivation, you'd call the Cornwall Alliance a, quote, apparatus of justification for climate change denialism, and thus the perpetuation of the capitalist system that continues to accelerate the present climate crisis, end quote. Can you explain to listeners in a nutshell what you mean by that?
Certainly. So this phrase apparatus of justification comes from this book, by Thomas Piketty, if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly. He explains that in our, you know, present global capitalist world, that things like, that things like economic inequality and all the problems that stem from it, that inequality can only be maintained for so long without there being some sort of pushback, right, of either, you know, historically, right, of, you know, revolution, right or reform, unless you can convince the people that are being oppressed that the things that they're suffering are not the fault of those who have more than them. Right. So if you know, within a society, if poverty is understood even by those who experience poverty as being a symptom of their own, you know, inability to, you know, get a certain job or get into a certain school, that shifts the blame right away from the true source, right, of that inequality. And so this is very important, not just for climate change, but sort of all of the social issues, that we're experiencing, in our present times. Mm-hmm. But in regard to climate change specifically, this is an issue that doesn't just threaten the poor, right? It threatens everyone, right? To an existential sense. And so if doing something about climate change is going to harm the ruling class, if it's going to reduce their power, influence, right, if it's going to, right, you know, reduce their wealth, then in order for that not to happen, they have to convince people that what we need to do about climate change, so there's sort of two sides of this, right? That either what we need to do about climate change is something, you know, individual, right? It's not something that stems from the fact that there are these great inequalities, right, between the working class and what you can, you know, loosely call the ruling class, or is to simply convince people that it's nonsense, right? That it's just, right, that it's just a myth, right? That it's a hoax. And so don't worry about it, right? And this is what the Cornwall Alliance functions as, right? As one of these apparatuses of apparatuses of justification.
Funded by very, very powerful interests. And you mentioned, you know, donors' trust and in ways in which dark money comes into donors' trust, and that they receive it from people who are invested in maintaining the status quo and using, or I should say, working with the Cornwall Alliance to sort of perpetuate this particular system that is based on fossil fuels. So there are many parts of this apparatus of justification, as the word alliance in Cornwall Alliance makes clear.
And now what you called it, the hastening the rapture through climate change belief.
Right, right.
That doesn't have to be the same message, and it doesn't have to be the same funding, but if they're linked in the minds of a person, then it produces these positive emotional identifications with messages that end up harming the environment. You could disentangle them analytically, but they don't end up getting disentangled analytically. They end up getting linked emotionally. At least that's my intuition about what's going on there. So can I ask you about why is it important for climate activists to think about the Cornwall Alliance as an apparatus of justification? As in, how might thinking about the alliance in those terms, in your analysis, how might your analysis help us address the climate crisis? What, if anything, does it suggest for strategies and tactics? How is it useful?
Certainly. So I think there's a couple main things to kind of think about here is that, but, you know, in any sort of, you know, I don't, you know, necessarily like the kind of, you know, warfare, right, you know, metaphor, but, you know, for lack of a better, right, for lack of a better one, right?
As a metaphor.
Right, yes, right. You know, it's important to know who your enemy is, right? Because you're not going to be able to address, you know, any sort of challenge unless you know what you're up against, right? You know, to go blind, you know, into a situation, right, where you don't know what's, you know, coming around the corner is very difficult to deal with. And so having this information, right, knowing how the opposite side is operating is vital, because if from the other direction, right, from the environmentalist, right, you know, position, you know, other people are, you know, pouring money into that as well. And, right, you know, we want to, right, you know, we're, right, you know, petitioning governments and all these things. But if we don't realize that the very people that we are trying to convince are also tied up, right, or at least, you know, some of them, right, are tied up in this web of the people that we're trying to, you know, both convince to, you know, move closer, right, to, you know, doing something, that becomes, you know, then those efforts, I mean, are not pointless, but, you know, are not going to achieve what they seem like they should be able to achieve. And so I think the direction that climate activists need to take is to actually sort of broaden their scope beyond just looking at climate change, because climate change, right, you know, from this perspective that I'm looking at, is just one of many symptoms of this global capitalist framework, right, in which we exist. And so, you know, whether it's, you know, poverty or economic inequality or racism or homophobia or gender inequality or immigration, right, all these issues that are, right, you know, that we see in the news every day, and that there are such, you know, divisive, right, you know, positions on, these are all symptoms that are made worse by the economic structure, right, in which they exist. And so to think that we can tackle climate change without tackling poverty, right, or without tackling racism, right, or any of these issues, is always going to fall short, right? All of these things have to be addressed together because they're all very much interrelated.
So we're here talking with Scott Howland from the University of Dayton. And Scott, I think just one more kind of big question I'd like to ask you. Members of the ruling class don't all have the same interests at all times. Some would benefit if we kept global heating in check. So in the long run, all of them would benefit if we kept global heating in check. Now, this Cornwall Alliance may be an instance of the energy industry's apparatus of justification, but it might not be the apparatus for all of capitalism. In fact, I think it isn't. What would it take to divide the ruling class on this? How would they ever let the big energy companies fail in order to preserve the rest of themselves? What are your thoughts?
Certainly. So this is something that I've thought about before, right, of this notion that they're right. You know, we can talk about, right, you know, the ruling class as a sort of, you know, vague entity, right. But these are individuals, right. And, you know, I would never encourage anyone to think, you know, that, you know, everyone who's a billionaire, right, you know, is this, you know, evil, right, you know, mm-hmm. mad scientist in a lab, right, you know, somewhere, right? I mean, these are people, right? You know, as you said, right, you know, they all have, you know, their own interest, right? I mean, and they're all, you know, right, they're all different people. And so there's sort of two sides of this coin, if you will, is that on the one, or right, on the one side, I think that, you know, right, that we have to be careful in our thinking that even actions, even money given that is well-intentioned, right, that even members of the ruling class that do want to help, which is certainly welcome, right? I mean, it's something that needs to happen. Is that that's entering a very sort of sticky web, right? Of you know, not even just of, you know, where's the money coming from, right? But ideologically as well, right? Of that, unless you have someone, you know, who has billions of dollars, who is interested in, you know, in getting rid of a lot of it, right? You know, which I don't think is impossible. I think it's just important to be aware of, you know, who you're, right, you know, teaming up with, right, to ensure that that person does have, you know, sort of, you know, genuine interest, right, you know, in this problem. Now, for those that do, which I would like to think that there are, I think that in the same way that, you know, among, you know, working class people, and when I say working class, right, I mean, I think the definition of working class is far broader, you know, say, than it was, you know, in Marx's day. Right. So when I say, you know, working class, I mean, essentially, I mean, anyone that works for a paycheck, right? So, I mean, you could make millions of dollars a year and still at least sort of generally be a working class person, right? I mean, you know, someone who's a, you know, right, you know, a brain surgeon or a, right, you know, an actor or something, those are people that still work for their money, right? Right. They might be wealthy, but they're not a part of this class of people that, right, whose money is solely made off of the work of other people. So, right. So that's just, you know, kind of, you know, one side note. So, in the same way that, you know, convincing working class people that climate change is a very, not just a real problem, right, but one that is going to affect how they live day to day, and showing them how taking steps to fight climate change, right, to fight, you know, the system that, you know, climate change is a part of, could also make their own lives better, right? I think there's a similar approach that they have to take with the other end of the spectrum of by showing people, right, that are, you know, broadly a part of, you know, this ruling class, that listen, you know, this notion that you're just gonna be able to ride this out, you know, longer than, you know, people who are poor, that, like, right, that'll be true for a while, right? But eventually, you know, there's only so many degrees that the earth can warm before it's not going to matter how much money you have, right? You know, whether, you know, this life is going to be sustainable. And so I think, you know, sort of these existential concerns, right, about, you know, what does it mean to, you know, live a dignified life, right, are not something that go away, right, just because, you know, people have, right, you know, extraordinary amounts of money. And so, and I'm not saying that's just, you know, going to be, you know, we have some, you know, casual conversations and you're just going to get, right. But the, you know, I think if there is an approach, right, you know, it's, you know, something, you know, along those lines.
Scott Howland, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we have an announcement today. Back on April 6th, Extinction Rebellion Radio interviewed Zava Candler of New York Renews, and he explained to us about the Climate and Community Investment Act, or CCIA. That's important legislation currently pending before the New York State Legislature. Though not a comprehensive solution to the entire climate crisis, what we conveyed in that interview is it's a clear step ahead of the status quo. But right now is a crucial time for bills in the New York State Legislature. In fact, June 10th is sort of the deadline for legislative action. So if people do want to take action on this, they can call their representatives and congressmen. This would be for the people in New York State, and they can go to rallies. The newyorkrenews.org/toolkits has a bunch of information about what you can do. Solidarity, everybody. This has been Extinction Rebellion Radio.
This Sunday, May 23rd at 7 p.m., join the discussion, a town hall hosted by WBAI's local station board about the media and the news, the stories that get covered by most media, and what doesn't get reported, including how social media amplifies some news stories and censors others, what's an activist to do, and where does WBAI fit in. The town hall, participation by Zoom, is this Sunday from 7 to 9 p.m. Guest speakers will be community activist Alicia Boyd, founder of the Movement to Protect the People, and Lisa Danielle, operations manager for Women's Press Collective, publisher of Collective Endeavor. Johanna Fernandez, host of WBAI's morning show, A New Day, will moderate. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacifica calendar and on the WBAI website. You can also access the meeting by calling 929-205-6099. That's 929-205-6099. And enter this meeting ID, 922-457-2995. One more time, 922-457-2995. And as if that wasn't enough numbers, we also have a password. The password is 995, like WBAI's frequency, 99.5. So it's 995-995-99. Once again, the phone number to call is 929-205-6099. The meeting ID is 922-457-2995, and the password, easy to remember because it's 995-995-99. Instructions for signing on to the meeting, including a link for listening over the web, is available on WBAI's main webpage, WBAI.org. Thanks for listening to all these numbers, and we hope you will join us at the Town Hall, May 23rd, at 7 p.m. for a discussion on media and the news. This is WBAI New York.
Greetings, this is Dr. James McIntosh, host of Mindfield, which comes to you every Wednesday at 2 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM. Together with my co-host, nurse family therapist, Richardina Theodore, we delve into the explosive issues in mental health. Our mission is to help you know yourself, release your anxieties in your depression, and free your mind. Only on WBAI, the voice of the voiceless, can we voiceless ones be heard. Support the show and WBAI by donating at give2wbai.org. That's the word give, the number 2, at wbai.org. Or by calling 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. You can support the show and the station even more by going to give2wbai.org and giving a monthly donation of as little as $10 $5 per month as a WBAI buddy to your favorite show on WBAI 99.5 FM.
We've got our friends at CNN here. You guys love breaking news, and you did it. You broke it. I think what no one in this room wants to admit is that Trump has helped all of you. He couldn't sell steaks or vodka or water or college or ties or Eric, but he has helped you. He's helped you sell your papers and your books and your TV. You helped create this monster, and now you're profiting off of him.
We're with you, Michelle Wolf, but if corporate media got you down, maybe you should try WBAI. We're listener-supported community radio, questioning the mainstream narratives trumpeted by the news profiteers. But in order for this whole thing...